going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We do a lot of health topics on this program, almost weekly. And arguably, one of the most complex topics is mental health. The science and the perceptions about mental health illness are constantly evolving. And tonight, we observe Mental Health Awareness Month as we discuss the many faces of mental illness. My guests tonight are Dr. Bianca Featherston. She is a psychologist with Featherston and Knight Psychological Services, and Amanda Tuck, a mental health advocate who has struggled with mental illness. We're talking about this tonight. If you have questions or comments or concerns about your mental health or the mental health of a loved one, we encourage you to give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. And you are certainly welcome to tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Amanda and Dr. Featherston, thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I am so appreciative to be here, particularly during this month, right? This is Mental Health Awareness Month. And
absolutely,
so being able to have a conversation, hopefully to inform, to inspire, and to invite folks
absolutely
to take care of themselves.
Let me start with a rather simple question. We often talk about the stereotypes regarding mental health. What are some of those stereotypes, Dr. Featherston, and how are those perceptions changing?
Oh, that is such a great question. And so some of the stereotypes crazy. People often use that term a lot when they're talking about things in general and they're talking about mental health, that individuals who are weak, who can't just get it together, is another stereotype. Individuals who are homeless, substance abuse, individuals who just don't know how to take care of themselves. And so there's a lot of stereotypes, unfortunately, that are barriers to people seeking help.
How have those perceptions changed?
I hesitate when I answer that question because we have a lot of work to do. A lot of work have been done. Education, getting it out there, putting more information about what is mental illness and what are mental conditions, and having organizations like NAMI, the National Alliance Mental Health Institute, doing things like Mental Health Awareness Month. Those are ways to kind of help change, but it's still a lot of barriers. And actually, as I'm talking, one of the things I think about is the stereotypes that's held in the Black African-American community, like being a strong Black woman, the angry Black man. Those are things that kind of are barriers as well to people seeking help. And so we're kind of hoping to unravel the mystery behind mental health, because I think a lot of people may not know about mental health as well. And so that's one of the things that we're hoping to change too.
Because one of the things that we have seen of late, and when I say of late, I mean very recently, over the past year or two, we have seen more and more high profile people who would be, air quotes, considered normal, who have come out and have been very open about some of their struggles with depression and other mental health illnesses, actors, athletes, politicians, and the like. Does that signal a sea change in your mind?
Yes, because it does invite the conversation. Because before, we tend to kind of keep it in a closet. We hide our crazy relatives, so to speak, in the upstairs, or no one really talks about it. We know that individuals may be acting strange, but no one was really having the conversation. So the more that you can humanize mental health conditions and mental illness, and see that individuals that are portrayed at the prime in their lives, and they have it together, and they have money, what could they be concerned about? And when you start to see those individuals coming out and saying, yes, I do have depression. Yes, I do have anxiety. It kind of helps put a face to something that was oftentimes hid away.
Mm-hmm. Amanda, you are an advocate, but you've also had a great deal of experience and struggles with mental health concerns, particularly depression, since at least the age of 19. Talk to me briefly about that. What was happening with you at 19?
At 19, I was a sophomore in college. Had done a pretty successful first year, but the weight of being the first one to go to college, having the expectations of my family, attempting to please a lot of other people, started to weigh on me. And then also the idea that I didn't really have anyone else to talk to. And I think the idea of isolation is one of the really common factors in mental illness. And like the doctor spoke to, the idea that it's a taboo, the idea that this is someone who is weak, this is someone who is not like the rest of us. If someone does find themselves struggling with mental illness, they feel like they have no one to talk to. So a mental health issue that's already hard, already difficult, becomes that much worse because you don't have anyone to lean on. The Black community is not very familiar with therapy or any other ways to treat mental illness. And so you kind of feel like you're on an island, or you're told to deal with it or pray about it. Something that kind of felt like toxic strength to me, where I was told to just push through. When no one would tell you to just push through high blood pressure. No one would tell you to just push through cancer. They would tell you to get treatment, and they would support you in your treatment. And so for me, it really took the courage to say, you know what, this doesn't feel good. I don't feel safe. I don't want to continue to struggle and feel sad and feel so depressed. I'm going to talk to a therapist. And I did it with a lot of naysayers, a lot of people in my family saying, we don't talk to strangers, you know, we don't put our business in the street. Why are you going to talk to somebody? You're just fine. You'll be okay. And I really just pushed past that to say, it's not enough. You know, I'm not okay. It's okay that I'm not okay, but I need to seek out the help. And I think that was probably the first step to an ongoing journey to manage my symptoms, to separate myself from the mental health issue. I am not depression. It is something that I have, the same way someone can have diabetes, the same way someone can have, you know, anything else that impacts your health. And I think changing the viewpoint of myself then gave me back the voice to speak to it and continue to get better personally.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about mental illness, mental health tonight, and the changing faces and perceptions of mental health and mental illness. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lamont, calling from Germantown, Maryland. Thanks for calling, Lamont. What's on
your
mind?
Great show. First of all, I admire your guests, and myself being Iraq war veteran, I didn't realize my disabilities until I started seeing other people from the VA and through my community. So when I acknowledged that I had issues and started speaking to other veterans, you know, it is difficult to speak up because I, you know, most boys, they're told not to react, don't show emotion. And so it's difficult to think that you have something, and then you start Google. Google's so famous. Oh, I got PTSD. I have bipolar. So you really don't know. So I went through a lot. I'm 51 years old, May 5th. I'm happy. I got my struggles, but I keep telling myself I'm happy because I have a family as far as children. So I earned my degree, and I work with other wounded warriors and let them know, hey, try to just communicate. But for myself, is a stigma because I work for federal government, and I was hired because the agency say, hey, we want to hire disabled vets. The issue is I have hidden disabilities. And when you see me 6'1", 190, wearing bow tie, got the cologne on, outgoing, you know, they say, wow. Oh, I didn't know you were disabled, because I have a disabled veteran plates on my vehicle.
Well, Lamont, let me see if my guests can at least address that, because I think you make an excellent point that your disability is not always apparent for those who are dealing with mental health issues. Dr. Featherston, your thoughts about that?
Oh, absolutely. As a psychologist, I work with veterans. I do want to piggyback on what Amanda said and highlight. She talked about toxic strength, and I think that is common in what, like Lamont said, with boys, but also in the military. The military does create an environment that you just suck it up. You suck it up and you keep moving. And that's what we're talking about, that toxic strength. And a lot of times individuals don't know that they are going through something, or maybe not even have the words to put to, why do I feel different? Why can't I socialize with my family? Why do I want to stay to myself? Why am I crying? Why am I so angry? Why, what is happening? What's all these chemical processes or these emotions that is happening to me that I never had before? How do I explain this? And so a lot of times individuals don't even know how to put words to what they're feeling. And then when they do try to put words to it, people will be dismissive, mm-hmm. or minimize it, or like Amanda talked about, that toxic strength. Push through it. Mm. You'll do it.
Lamont, thank you so much for sharing with us. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Bernard, calling from Upper Marlboro. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, my question is, how do you seek treatment for someone who doesn't recognize that they do need treatment?
That is such a great question. Thank you so much for that. That's an excellent, excellent question, because that seems to be kind of the opposite of what Amanda went through, where her family was telling her she didn't need to talk to someone. But Bernard is asking, you know, again, the opposite.
Yes, I recommend the language. And I say that to say being very sensitive, again, to how you present what you're noticing, the individual is displaying. You know, you might notice that they're forgetting a lot. They have problems with concentration. They tend to want to shut themselves off from the world. They tend to want to, be, you know, they're always irritable. And so being able to have a conversation in a place of love, in a place of support, I really care about you. These are some things that I'm noticing that are changing, and this is not how I come to understand you. Let's go together. And you can also have the person go talk to their primary care doctor and have an honest discussion with their primary care doctor. You know, it's hard for me to get out of bed. I can't concentrate. I'm feeling tired all the time. I'm having these headaches. I'm having these aches and pains. And the primary care doctor can absolutely make a referral to a mental health specialist. But I think being careful about how we talk about it and not using some of those words like "you acting crazy" and "I can't deal with you" and just kind of come from a place of love and support can be helpful.
And for those who are looking for help, somebody to talk to or services, where can they go?
So they can absolutely NAMI. So the National Alliance of Mental Health Institute, NAMI.org, is a great resource to kind of help you have a discussion. If someone is in a crisis and they're expressing suicidal thoughts, you can call 911 immediately, or you can call the 1-800-275-TALK.
What's that number again?
1-800-275-TALK, T-A-L-K, and that's 24/7. There's a lot of resources out there that individuals can tap into. If you are a veteran, you can certainly go to the va.gov website, and there are different resources there.
And you have a website as well.
I do. And so as clinical director and co-owner of Featherston & Knight Psychological Services, you can reach me at fkpsychservices.com.
Before I go to a break, something that Amanda said that I want you to address. What is the difference between someone powering through emotionally and someone who cannot? What is happening inside that may allow someone to deal with the same laundry list of things that Amanda was dealing with and someone else not being able to?
First things first, I think the way that we're talking about mental health is that we first have to understand that mental conditions are brain disorders. And what that means is that the brain may not be processing neurotransmitters correctly. It may not be reuptaking. So like serotonin and dopamine are neurotransmitters that are responsible for how we feel. And so there's a combination of things, the way that our body is responding, how genetics play a part into it, life events. And so there is a combination of things that could contribute to someone feeling depressed and having anxiety or having a bipolar disorder. So we don't want to compare individuals and say, well, so-and-so was able to make right. it. Why weren't you able to make it? And everybody responds to things very differently. People can have the same traumatic event and not necessarily develop PTSD.
Need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Ms. Lynn calling from Silver Spring. Also, Angie calling from Temple Hills. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. If you're on the phone, do not hang up. You will be able to hear the program. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR, but we will continue this conversation on Sirius XM, Channel 141 in just a few seconds. Stay with us.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we are observing Mental Health Awareness Month and discussing the many faces of mental illness. My guests are Bianca Featherson. She is a psychologist with Featherson and Knight Psychological Services. Also Amanda Tuck, a mental health advocate who has struggled with mental illness. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Before I go back to the phone lines, Amanda, you said that you began to have these issues at 19. How old are you now?
I will be 36 in this coming July.
How did, congratulations, by the way, happy
Thank
birthday
you.
Coming up. How did you address these issues once you sought counseling, treatment? What was your biggest issue after you began to seek help?
Biggest issue. I think it all boiled down to self-acceptance. And that came from realizing that my perspective of self was completely dictated by everyone else around me. Was I a good daughter? Was I a good friend? Was I a good sister? And so if the people around me were pleased with me, then I was doing great. But when those people were upset with me, as humans get upset with other humans, we're not perfect, that took a huge impact on my self-esteem, my viewpoint of myself, and then my value in my eyes plummeted. And so with that very fragile image of yourself, it's very easy to slip in and out of depression. And even going back to what the previous caller was asking is like the difference between someone who can power through and someone who can't. For me, it was simply education and normalizing mental health. And so me going to therapy for the very first time opened up the conversation in my family. Before going to therapy, I had no idea that my mother's side struggled with depression. I had no idea that there was bipolar and schizophrenia on my father's side. I had no idea that alcoholism ran in my family and that that also contributed to mental illness. But again, we are a Christian family. We are your typical Black American family. And so we push through. We are strong. We are independent Black women and tough. And all that sounds great, but it creates a perfect environment for the death of our family. We're split. We're divided by the very things that we're all struggling with. So many of us, you know, will ridicule people around us, like the doctor was mentioning. They're crazy, or what's wrong with them? And if they're really honest with themselves, they've had some of those same symptoms. They've had dark times and dark moments where they might have been able to suppress it. You know, they might be better than myself or better than other people who battle mental illness on the daily, but it doesn't make them better than anyone. It doesn't make them less prone to it. And I think as we continue to educate our peers, as we continue to normalize, you know, if I were to speak to someone who I believe needed mental health, me normalizing it is saying without any qualms, yes, I do go see a therapist regularly. I'm very grateful for my therapist. It's made all the difference in the world. And sometimes hearing it from a peer, like, wow, I never would have thought that. You don't look depressed. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that.
What does that look like? Yeah, certainly.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Certainly a consideration. Let me go back to the phone lines. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Ms. Lynn calling from Silver Spring. Thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind?
Yes, I just have a quick question. How are you all this evening?
Just fine.
Good.
I was wondering if grieving, going through a grievance because of the loss of loved ones could be considered sort of a temporary mental illness. Because the last 4 years have lost at least 7 family members, 3 of which were immediate family members, my father, my sister, who was untimely death, and then my mother just died back on April 11th. Mm-hmm. And I feel strong, but sometimes I just want to break down and cry when I think about all the family members that I've lost. So my question is, you know, is going through a grievance kind of, is that a mental illness kind of thing that's temporary?
I think that is such a great question. Please go right ahead, Dr. Featherstone.
I do want to make a distinction between persistent complex bereavement and grieving. I threw out a doctor's term. Persistent complex bereavement is a process of grieving when you've had multiple losses. And it has complicated the grieving process. Okay. What I've heard her say is that she's endured loss after loss after loss. So she's really never had a chance to really go through the grieving process. And the grieving process is a individualized process. And hear me when I say that, because people sometimes will say, won't you just go on? Can't you move on? And you don't move on. You work through it to be able to move forward, because you don't forget the individuals that you lost. You carry them with you. And so we're hoping, like, through time and going to talk to someone, that the pain is not as intense, and that you'll be able to work through it. So when you talk about a temporary, I don't put a timeline to the grieving process, because it's an individual process, and you can experience a range of emotions from shock, anger, resentment, hope, acceptance, sadness. And so it takes time to kind of work through all of those things. And it also depends on how those individuals passed away. That can complicate the grieving process. If someone had a medical condition and you kind of expected them to pass away, it's different from someone being killed or it was an unexpected loss. Mm-hmm. And so to answer your question, it's a very individualized process, and it's your time. And nobody can tell you how to heal and when to heal. You have to work through that with a professional.
Okay. Lynn, thank you so much for sharing with us. Let's go to Angie. Angie also has a question about grieving, calling from Temple Hills. Angie, go right ahead.
Yes. My question was pretty much the same. I lost my mother on April 5th, and it has been really, really hard to accept it, because she died all of a sudden. So it was something that was not expected. And I was actually her caretaker for the last 3 years. So, you know, it feels like at times, like, am I going to, be able to make it in life without her, because I was so close? And when, is it a time to go talk to someone? When would I know? Like, I know it's individualized, like you said, as far as the grieving period. But when do you decide that perhaps you need to talk? Is there certain thoughts that I might have that are not healthy when you're grieving? Or is all of it, you know, because, you know, sometimes I'm extremely angry about it. And then, of course, I'm overwhelmed with sadness and accepting it. So, you know, I'm just trying to figure out, is that normal in grieving? And are there certain signs that would say perhaps you need to talk to someone about it?
You said April 5th. You mean April 5th of this year?
Yes.
Last month.
Last month.
Yeah, it's been just over a month, and she's talking about her mother. Mm-hmm. So that is not a long time.
And not only that, but she was a caretaker.
Yeah.
And so also just kind of seeing the physical changes of our loved ones as they're going through whatever medical conditions that could be the cause.
Hello?
Yeah, hold on. I'm going to let Dr. Featherston speak, and then Amanda's going to address the question as well. Please go right ahead, Dr.
I was just saying that also seeing the physical changes that a loved one goes through that have a medical condition as you're a caregiver also can complicate the process. Grieving can certainly lead to depression. And so one of the questions she asked was, well, when do I go talk to someone? Because it is normal to feel the anger, the shock, the resentment, and the confusion and all those things. My suggestion is when it starts to be overwhelming and it starts to impair your functioning. If you can't go to work, if you can't live your day-to-day life, if you can't really socialize and all you want to do is kind of isolate and be in your own world and not be bothered by anybody, or the memories become too painful, then I would suggest talking to someone or just talking to someone in general about the grieving process and what you've experienced.
Amanda, I'm sorry. Yes, Amanda, you wanted to speak on that.
Yes, also to piggyback off of what Dr. Featherston was saying, definitely when you notice that your ability to function, as you put it, going to work or even being in social settings, when you notice that you're not as social as you typically are, or simple conversations become difficult for you, or you're just isolating in general, that is a good time to reach out. And if you don't initially reach out to a professional, reach out to someone close to you. There may have been a family friend or someone who also knew your mother and is also grieving. And sometimes just that sense of community, that sense that I'm not the only one hurting, I'm not the only one that's dealing with this, can go a long way in helping you continue to process. The only other thing that I would tell you to be mindful of is when you stop processing, because grieving is a process. And so you'll go through cycles of emotions, you'll go through extremes of emotions, but as long as you're processing, like, oh, okay, this is what's making me angry, or okay, this is coming back to me as what I'm still grieving. When you hit that wall where it's like, this makes me angry, I'm so angry, I'm going to suppress it, I'm going to push it down. You know, questions come up or issues come up and you don't address those issues, I think that is when you should seek additional help, draw to your community, draw to a professional that can continue to help you process. Because as the doctor said, you have to work through it. You have to be patient with yourself, and you have to give yourself the space and opportunity to heal and address all the issues. A lot of times, grief brings up so many other issues that we've suppressed or that we've chosen not to deal with. And so a lot of times, it's a lot of unpacking.
Absolutely. And sometimes when we are in pain, emotional pain, and when we're hurting, we try to avoid. And so there's a numbing that takes place, and that just stalls the healing process. So for healing to really work, you have to feel all the emotions and really work through it and not push it behind in your back of your mind or try to tuck it somewhere and not deal with it. You really have to work through and get through the process.
Amanda, I know that we're going to lose you in about two more minutes. So I wanted you to have a final word before you leave our conversation.
Thank you. I really appreciate being on, and I really appreciate the task of being a mental health advocate. I know people who have also suffered from mental illness. I know people that we've lost as a result of mental illness. And I just believe that it is an issue that doesn't have to be as problematic as it is specifically in our community. A lot of the minority communities, we do it to ourselves. We create this environment of isolation where we're all suffering with something, or we all know someone who's suffering with something. But because we choose to adhere to toxic strength, because we choose to put on a front, put on a face, try to impress a number of other people who really can't even support us or can't help us. We don't draw on the sense of community. I really believe that as Black people, we are a people of community. We are a people of tribes, and we have to get back to that. We have to get back to leaning on one another. We have to get back to honest, open, vulnerable communication. I know that's what saved my life. And if my communication, if my honesty about my mental illness could save one life, then it's all worth it. So I really appreciate the time here.
Well, thank you so much, Amanda. I really appreciate your honesty and your openness to talk about this important issue. And we wish you continued health and strength in your work that you're doing for the community. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation about dealing with mental health issue, the changing face of mental illness. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. And by the way, Angie, thank you so much for your phone call as well. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Of course, we are continuing our conversation about the many faces of mental illness. I am here with Dr. Bianca Featherston as we continue the finding answers, not only about the changes that have taken place in perception about mental health, as well as the science. And, you know, one of the things that I wanted to ask, because we had a couple of guests, callers, asking about when to talk to someone. Is it possible that you may think you have an issue, and after going to counseling, find out that there you don't have an issue, that you don't have an issue?
I think that's a tricky question. I do believe in being able to talk to someone. Life is stressful. I have yet to meet anybody that gets to, you know, walk around life with a bed of roses. And, you know, we all have things that, you know, we're going through. So any point in time that consistently you're feeling down, or consistently you're anxious, or consistently you're irritable, or you're consistently experiencing physical health conditions, and there's no explanation to why you're getting these headaches or stomach aches, or you already have a medical condition and it starts to get worse, really talk to someone. And I do think that going to therapy takes a lot of strength. A lot of times people don't know what psychotherapy is. And it's sitting down talking to a trained individual, and it brings awareness. It brings awareness to thoughts and emotions that you probably didn't think you had. It helps you come up with ideas and ways to cope differently, help you come up with some solutions and some self-reflection to kind of understand things a little differently. So I don't think there's any minor problems. You know, sometimes people say, well, I'm going to college and I'm just having some academic problems. Should I go talk to someone? Absolutely, you can go talk to someone, because you can start to uncover the layers there.
Let me go to Lisa. Lisa just called in. Lisa calling from Rockville. What's on your mind, Lisa?
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. So my sister is in New York. She's suffered from a lot of what I call mental illness, anxiety attacks. She says she has pain in her stomach, but the doctors have not been able to find that. She's dangerous to herself. She hurts herself. And just recently, she had a heart attack. She had a stent put in, but the hospital just released her today. And she has minor children. She's single. She can't take care of herself. And we just don't know what to do. Like, we just don't know what to do.
Advice. What should she do?
I mean, that is like, should I? We don't want to commit her, but she just can't. I'm here in Maryland, but she's in New York.
Yeah.
And I was just there over the weekend. We're just beside ourselves. We don't know what to do.
Let me see what Dr. Featherston has to say about that. I think, as difficult as this may be for Lisa, I would imagine this is not uncommon.
This isn't uncommon. And it's, first of all, Lisa, thank you for calling in. And I definitely can hear your frustration and definitely hear your concern for your family member. Because it's really hard to, how do you get people to get help who don't want to get help?
No, she wants help.
She wants help.
They don't know what's wrong. They don't. Okay. they released her again, and
she was evaluated by had a psychiatric evaluation by a psychologist, or
yes, she had one, and they calling it anxiety.
Okay,
but so supposedly they can't give her any, like, she needs to follow up, of course, with a primary care doctor and a psychiatrist, but oh boy, she just doesn't have the ability, you know, she doesn't have the wherewithal, like, to, it's a lot of care that she needs.
Okay.
I'm not there, so, you know, I don't,
yes.
By her being home, there's no one there to say, okay, now we need to make an appointment with the psychiatrist, you need to take this med.
Okay.
Now you need to, you know, you need to go over here, you need to do this, there's no one there, so...
So it sounds like maybe case management services. I'm not familiar with how New York works. But if she's been at the hospital there, and you can ask if she was recently discharged, you can ask for a medical social worker. And a medical social worker can suggest community resources that can really help your loved one. It seems like she needs case management. When I say case management, a social worker or a case manager that comes into her life that kind of helps her set appointments, may provide transportation to appointments, may help her with self-care, taking care of herself, taking care of home. So there may be some resources in New York. I'm just not familiar with New York. But it sounds like case management services could be something that could really be helful in having a peer support group as well to kind of help her. Okay, this is what you need to do. You need to go to these appointments. You need to see this doctor, see this therapist, and help her follow through with care. So talk to a medical social worker at the hospital that she was recently discharged and see if there's some community resources that your loved one can get involved with. If you're not, don't have any luck with the medical social worker, then you can call the Department of Social Services in New York and you can explain some of the things that your loved one has going on and see how they can hook her up with some social services to help her.
Just one other thing, the other caveat to that is that, and you were talking a little bit about it before I came in on the tail end, is the stigma. So she has small children. Another thing is she's worried about asking for care, and then they take the kids from her. They open up a child, whatever case, or, you know, old school New York ACS or whatever. So that's another concern, too. So the family, like even her son, is like they're hush-hush about things. They don't say things because they've been taught, don't talk about what goes on in here because then they'll take the kids away and all this kind of stuff. So,
That is a common fear, because as soon as I mention social work or Department of Social Services, the first thing that people think, they're going to come in to the home and take my kids away.
Right.
Unless the children are in danger, and there's some abuse or some neglect going on, then a case can be open and that could be a possibility. But the longer that she sit and suffer and don't take care of herself, the more likely she can neglect her children and the more likely someone can call social services on her and take her children away. But they could absolutely put a plan in motion to help her take care of herself so that she can take care of her children. A lot of times we don't want to talk to anybody because we are afraid that they're going to take our loved ones away or take our children away, when actually they can really help and put a plan in place for her so that she can be a better caretaker for her children.
Okay. Well, Lisa, Okay. Thank you so much for talking to us, and certainly good luck with your sister.
I do urge her to please contact either the medical social worker or the Department of Social Services and see how they can get some case management services for her loved one.
Okay, I sure will. Thank you so much, Doctor.
You're welcome.
Thank you. How do you deal with someone who does not believe that they are having struggles with mental illness? And I'm not necessarily talking about something that is wholly obvious, something that is subtle. You mentioned earlier people forgetting things. Well, people forget stuff.
They do.
They get busy.
Mm-hmm.
Life happens, but if someone notices a a subtle pattern.
Yes, a pattern, and consistently. So, yes, we can all, you know, forget things, forget appointments, or, you know, forget our car keys or something like that. But if it's consistently and there's a combination of things along with that forgetfulness, the difficulty to concentrate, feeling worn down and tired all the time, having unexplained physical aches like the stomach aches, not really wanting to be bothered and isolate and shut in and be by myself. Those are some common signs that there is something going on. And so you do want to get checked first medically, seeing to make sure, because you know medical conditions can certainly lead to emotional and mental health conditions. So we know that diabetes, cancer, high blood pressure can be connected to depression and anxiety. So, you know, taking care of your overall health, that's a challenge sometimes, because a lot of times people may not have health insurance, or they don't go to the doctor, or when they finally do go to the doctor, there's a crisis, and the conditions are chronic. So I really do. I hear your question when you say, well, how do you help someone that may not be aware of having a mental health concern? And as a psychologist, what I do is I sit with people and I am present and I listen and I try to break down some of the stereotypes and some of the stigmas and talk about how stress is a killer. Stress is a killer. And if you're not being able to take care of yourself, and I'm talking about different aspects of self-care, from a spiritual component, from an emotional component, from a physical component, from a social component, from a mental component, if you are lacking in taking care of yourself in those aspects, then really talk to someone. If stress is inhibiting you from really taking care of yourself, go talk to someone. It doesn't hurt to sit down and talk to someone. They can certainly help you maybe understand what you're feeling and how you're coping, and give you some tools and some techniques.
But for someone who knows that, and for someone who knows that they have an issue, however slight, how do you get them to take the next step to talk to someone, even if they say, I know I need to talk to someone, but they don't. I know I need to get out of the bed, but they don't. I know I'm depressed, and I know I need to do something about it. But they don't. How do you get that don't to do?
Patience. It's interesting. I think about the actress Jennifer Lewis, who said that it took her therapist 7 years to convince her to take medicine. So patience, and really coming from, again, from a place of support. And say, you know, this is not who I have come to understand who you are. This is really concerning me. I really love you. And I don't know how to be there for you. Tell me how I can be there for you. Tell me how I could be supportive of you. Tell me your concerns about going to talk to someone. The caller last said that her sister is concerned that her children. That's a very real concern, a real fear. What would happen if I sought out help? Would my children be taken away from me? I can't pay for medicine, or I can't pay for therapy, or I can't do this. And so really, people not understanding what could be out there and available to them. There are resources, individuals. We don't have to suffer in silence. We do not have to suffer in silence.
I think that's a good place to end this conversation. Dr. Bianca Featherston, thank you so much for talking to us. We also want to thank Amanda Tuck for sharing with us in part of the conversation as well. And don't forget, the resources that we mentioned during the course of this conversation will be posted on our website on WHUR.com, as well as the podcast after 9 o'clock. So we invite you to join us online. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM channel 141 for this Wednesday, May 8th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.